Today's shir is Masechta Erechin on Daf Chof Gimel. We begin at the top of the Amud with the new Mishnah. Before we start the Mishnah, let us make a brief Hagdama. When a husband gives his wife a ksuba, which she will receive after the husband dies or he divorces her, immediately there is a shibud, there is a lien from the ksuba to the possessions of the husband. And therefore, if the husband goes ahead and sells property to Lekuchos, the lien of the ksuba goes on those properties, and when he divorces her, or when he dies, his wife is able to collect from those who have bought the field, the Lekuchos. And not only is this in the case of a private individual buying from her husband the field, but so too if the husband was magdish, if he sanctified the property to the Bedek Habayis of the Beis HaMikdash, his wife has a shibud on that property, and she can collect from Hegdish. Exactly how she's able to collect from Hegdish, the procedure, we will learn Be'ezus Hashem on the Mishnah on Amud Beis. The Mishnah there tells exactly how the procedure is done. Begins the Mishnah. HaMagdish Nechasov, if somebody dedicates his property to the Beis HaMikdash, he sanctifies, he's magdish his property, and on this property there was the lien of Iksuba for his wife. Rabbi Lezer says, Kishi Garshena, if he subsequently divorces his wife, Yidur Hana, the Bezdin forces him to make a vow that he will not have Hana from his wife in the future. And by doing that, it means that he will be unable to remarry his wife. And the reason the Bezdin insists on this nether is because we're afraid of a knunya. A knunya is, as Rashi translates it on the second line, a rama. This is a trick that perhaps he's only divorcing his wife so that she will be able to collect the ksuba from Hegdish, then he will remarry her, and they will be able to use the property from Hegdish, which she receives for her ksuba. And therefore, in order to make sure that such a sham, such a trick is not perpetrated against Hegdish, the Bezdin forces him to make this neder. However, Rabbi Yeshua disagrees, and Rabbi Yeshua says, Rabbi Yeshua Aymer, Einoit Tzorich. He does not have to make this neder. And the Gemara will give us several reasons why Rabbi Yeshua is of this opinion. Ki yaitzu b'davar, similarly says the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, af ha'arev le'isha b'ksubasa. If somebody got married and there was a guarantor who guaranteed the wife that she would be able to collect her ksuba in case her husband wouldn't have any ability to pay the ksuba, and that's the same in the case of Hegdish, we can only go to Hegdish, the woman can only go if the husband doesn't have any means of paying. But this Orev promised, he guaranteed that if the husband won't have any money, then he will pay the ksuba of his wife. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, afa Orev le'isha b'ksubasa, even someone who's a guarantor for a woman on her ksuba, v'hoyo bala megarsha, and then the husband divorced her, yadirena hano. So again, Bezdin forces the husband to be mater neder, to not allow himself through a neder, to have hano from his wife, which means he won't be able to remarry her. And why do we do this? Shema yasa kinunya al nechashim shalzeh. Because maybe the husband and wife will do a trick on the property of the arev, v'yachzer es ishtai. And after he divorces her, and she collects her ksuba from the arev, because the husband doesn't have anything to pay her the ksuba from, then the husband will go ahead and remarry her, and they'll be able to use this property, they'll be able to use the money for themselves. And even though Dinamuki Yosef in Bava Ba'asra, Daf Kufayin Gimel Amud Beis speaks out, that even though once they remarry, so the husband has rights in his wife's property, so now the Orev can go back to the husband and say to the husband, give back, since you're remarried, give back now the ksuba that you collected from me, give it back to me. But we're afraid, says the Nemuk Yosef, that perhaps the husband and wife, after they get remarried, will quickly use up that property, the proceeds of that property, and there'll be nothing left when the Ariv comes to recollect it. So therefore, we make him make a neder that he will not remarry his wife. Now here, we do not find that Rabbi Yeshua argues, and Bepashtus, it would seem from the Mishnah, that here Rabbi Yeshua will agree with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that we make such a neder. Rabbi Yeshua only argued in the first case because we're speaking about Hegdish, but in the second case where we're speaking about a Hedjit, it seems that Rabbi Yeshua will agree and will understand this better as we learn the reasons in the Gemara. Begins the Gemara. But my kamifkli, what exactly is the machlokas in the beginning of the Mishnah between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua, that Rabbi Lazar says by Hegdish we force the husband when he divorces his wife to make a neder, and Rabbi Yeshua says, Ein Tzarach, it's not necessary. What are they arguing in? So the Gemara explains, Rabbi Eliezer, Sover Adam Isaac Nunyal Hegdish, that a person makes a trick not only with an individual, but he'll make it even with Hegdish. And that's why, in order to make sure that he doesn't do this trick of divorcing his wife and then remarrying her and using up the property of Hegdish, therefore, Bezdin forces him to make this neder, that he will not have enough from his wife. Rabbi Yeshua, Sover, Rabbi Yeshua disagrees. And Rabbi Yeshua holds, Ein Adam Isaac Nunyal Hegdish, that a person, he may make a kanunya with an individual, but he will not make a knunya with Hegdish. And based on this, we understand very well why Rabbi Yeshua doesn't argue in the Seif of the Mishnah. Because the Seif of the Mishnah is speaking about an Orev, a guarantor. He's not Hegdish, he's a Hedjit. And there Rabbi Yeshua agrees that a person, even if he won't make a knunya trick against Hegdish because of the sanctity, the holiness of Hegdish, but on to an individual, we are choshesh that he will make a trick. And therefore, in the Sefer, Rabbi Yeshua agrees to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that Bezdin forces him to make a neder that he will not remarry his wife. Ask the Gemara of Elohad Amar Rav Huna, that which Rav Huna said, the following halacha, Shchiv Mara, someone who is critically ill, and he's on his deathbed. Shehigdish called Nechasev, he was Magdish, all his Nechasim, to the Bedek Abayis, the Omar, and he said, Mana l'ploini b'yadi, that even though I was Magdish, all my property, but one mana that I have is really not mine, it belongs to somebody else. The halacha is, Neman, he's believed. Why? Chazaka ein oise knunya ala Hegdish. Because we assume that a person will not make a trick with Hegdish. We could be choshesh, we could suspect that really his friend doesn't have any mana by him. And really it all belongs to Hegdish, because he was Magdish everything. And he's just doing this as a trick, as a method of getting back a mana from Hegdish, and then perhaps splitting it with his friend. But we have a chazaka that Rav Huna says, no, that a person will not make a trick with Hegdish. So the Gemara asks, based on our explanation of the Reish of the Mishnah, the machalakis between Rabbi Lezer and Rav Yeshua, now, l'chayr, we could say, le'meket tanoi amr l'shmaitzei. This halacha that Rav Huna said is really a machalakis tanoim. And it will come out that the words of Rav Huna are only according to Rabbi Yeshua, who holds that you don't have to make a neder in the case of Hegdish, because we're not choshish that someone will make a trick with Hegdish. But according to Rabbi Lazar, who says that a person will make a trick with Hegdish, l'chayra, the words of Rav Huna are coming out only like Rabbi Yeshua and not like the Tana Rabbi Eliezer. And it's difficult to say that Rav Huna's words should only come out according to one Tana, that he's involving himself, his din, in a machloikis tanoim. So the Gemara says, loy, not correct. We don't have to say it's a machloikis tanoim. We can say that everyone agrees with Rav Huna that ein oise knunya la Hegdish. So if so, what is the machloikis between Rav Eliezer and Rav Yeshua? So the Gemara explains, ad kan le pligi, when is Rav Eliezer and Rav Yeshua arguing in our Mishnah that's only ela bebori? Here we're speaking about a healthy individual. Then there's a machloikis, whether someone will make a trick with Hegdish or not. What's the case of Rav Huna? By Shchiv Mara. Avol b'shchiv mera, but by someone who is deathly ill, he's on his deathbed. Divrei HaKoel, there everyone, both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, will agree that ein adam oise knunya al Hegdish, that a person doesn't make a knunya with Hegdish. And the reason is, my taima, what's the reason? Why is a shchiv mera different than a bori? Because ein adam chayte v'loy loy. A person doesn't do a sin and he has no gain out of it. Because here he's on his deathbed. So who's going to gain from this trick? It's going to be his yarshim, those who inherit from him. He himself is going to die. He's not going to have hanoah from this trick. So somebody to make a trick against Hegdish and he has no benefit from it, there everyone agrees that a person does not sin if he's not going to get a benefit from it. And therefore, in that case, everyone will agree that they will not make a knunya. So now, based on this first explanation of the Machlokes Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, it comes out that we have three dinim. If we're speaking about an Arev who's a Hedyot, there everybody holds that a person would make a Knunya. And that's why in our Mishnah, the husband will have to be Mutter Neder, that he will not have Hanoah from his wife and he will not remarry her. Because we are Choshish for Knunya by a Hedyot, by Hegdish. So it depends. If we're speaking about a Bori, a healthy person, there we have a Machlokes. That's the Machlokes in our Mishnah between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, whether a healthy person will make a trick with Hegdish or not. Rabbi Elazar says he will make a trick, and therefore he has to make a neder not to remarry her. Rabbi Yeshua says he will not make a trick, and therefore he does not have to make a neder. And finally, in the case of Rav Huna, which is speaking about a Shchiv Mara pertaining to Hegdish, there everyone agrees that Ein Oisa Knunya, he will not make a Knunya with Hegdish, and that is why the halach is, he's believed to say that a mana of my friend is in my hand, and it does not belong to Hegdish. Continues the Gemara, Ikad Yamri, some say that the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua is in something else, because Bibori, the Kuli Amalei Pligi, by a Bori, there is no machlokes, not like we said before. There is no machlokes, and what does everybody hold? And here we have the Shita in Ois Hei and the Maseres HaShas in Ois Dalid, our Go race, the Odom Osek Nunyal Hegdish. We take out the word De'ein. By Bori, everybody agrees that a person does make a Knunya on Hegdish. So if everybody agrees, so why does Rabbi Yeshua argue on Rabbi Elazar? We should give the Neder. The answer is, v'hocha b'neder shehuder b'rabim kamiflegi. The machlokas is, if a neder is done in public, whether you can break such a neder or not. Mar sover yesh loy hafora. Rav Yeshua is of the opinion that you could be made for a neder even if it's done in public. Umar sover ein loy hafora. And Rav Elazar holds that a neder that's done in public, you can never break. You can't go to a chacham and be matarit. So, therefore, according to Rabbi Yeshua, who says that you could break it, when Rabbi Yeshua says, Ein Oitzarech, Rabbi Yeshua means, according to this pshat, you don't need it because there's no value in it. What are you going to do as an Eitzah that there shouldn't be a trick? You're going to make him make a neder, but he can always get out of it. Even if he does it in public, he can go and be made for his neder. And then he will be allowed to remarry his wife. So you're not doing anything to fix the kenunya, the trick. So if I hold that a neder that's done by Rabbi Yesh Lehafor, which is the svar of Rabbi Yeshua, that's what Rabbi Yeshua says, and it's tzarech, don't give it to him because you're not accomplishing anything. However, Rabbi Elazar says, no, you are accomplishing, because once it's done in public, there's ein lo yafor, you can't break such a neder. So now we have a good eitza what to do about a kenunya. We'll make him make a neder barabim. He won't be able to break it, and therefore he won't be able to remarry his wife, so he's not going to make a trick and divorce his wife, because he won't be able to remarry her. The boy same, or if you want, we could say another pshat in the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. The kuli alma, everybody holds neder shehud de barabim, yesh lo yafor. A neder, if it's done, even if it's not in public, you could break it. But v'hocha b'neder shehuder al das rabim kamifukhi. But here we're speaking about a neder that was done with the intent of a rabim. As Rashi says, she'oimrim lo nedor, because Bezdin is telling him, go make a neder. And here we do have a machlokes. Even if I'll say a neder that's done in public, you could break, but a neder that's done with the understanding that there's a public who wants you to make the neder, al das rabim, like here the Bezdin wants you to make a neder, there Rabbi Elazar holds ein lo yafora, because ein echanami, you want to break your neder, but this neder is not to be viewed only as your own personal neder. This neder is coming from a rabbim who are making you make the neder, and they are not maskim that you should break the neder, and therefore Rabbi Elazar holds ein lo yafor. Rabbi Yeshua still holds yesh lo yafor. So in Mele, if Rabbi Yeshua holds a neder al das rabbim, you could break, there's no purpose in giving him a neder, he can always get out of the neder, and that's why Rabbi Yeshua says ein oitzarech, don't give him the neder, you're not accomplishing anything to reduce the risk of a knunya. What's the te'elis of it? However, Rabbi Elazar says, no, a neder that's done al das rabbim, you cannot break, and therefore give him the neder, and that will stop the knunya. Now, according to these last two perushim, these last two explanations in the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, whether you can break a neder that's done in public, or whether you can break a neder that's done with the das of a public. So, l'chaira, Rav Yeshua will not only argue by Hegdish, but he will also argue on the last case of our Mishnah of Arev. Because according to this, there's no specific svara of why Hegdish should be stronger in than a Hedjit. In the first pshat, where we were speaking about Kenunya, so there's a logic that a person won't start up with Hegdish, even though he'll start up with an individual with a Hedjit. But here, where it's totally in, can you break a neder that's done by Rabim or Aldas Rabim, so there's no nafkamina between Hegdish and Hedjit, and therefore it would come out like this pshat, even though Rabbi Shu is not mentioned in the Seif of the Mishnah as arguing on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it would stand to reason that Rabbi Yeshua would also argue against Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and say, Einoi Tzarech, what are you accomplishing? He can always get out of a neder if it's done by Rabim or Aldas Rabim, and you're not accomplishing anything. Ask the Gemara, according to these last two pshatim, velahodam rameir, that which our Meir said, neder shehudu b'rabim, a neder that was done in public, yesh le'afor. But aldas rabim, if it was done with the consent, with the knowledge of rabim who are telling him, make the neder, ein le'afor, then everybody holds ein le'afor. What do you mean? Lema ketanoi. Amr l'shmaitzei. L'chayra, a Maimer is saying something that we just learned is totally in the machlokas between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Because it's only Rabbi Lazar who holds ein le'afor, but Rabbi Yeshua holds a neder that's not al das rabim. It is yesh le'afor. So it would come out that a Maimer is saying something only according to Rabbi Lazar. And we want that an Amoira should be able to say his Shmaitzeh, his Halach, according to everybody. So that's one problem. Vesu, I have another problem with the Pshat that you just said. Rabbi Yeshua, I mean, what's the language of Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah? You don't need a Neder. That's good according to the Pshat that a person doesn't start up with Hegdish. He doesn't make a trick on Hegdish. Then, Ein Tzarech, you don't need it. We're not worried that he's going to make a trick on Hegdish. But according to the pshat that you said, that a person will start up with Hegdish. The only thing is, we have no way of stopping him through a netter because I can always break the netter. So the language is not precise. It shouldn't have been Ein Tzarech. He doesn't need a netter. It should be Ein Moyel Meboyolei. Rabbi Yeshua should have been more exact in his wording, and he should have said, what are you going to give him a neder, which he can always break, even if it's al-das rabim? So he should have used the word, ein moyel. And that's why the Gemara does not like this pshat. So what does the Gemara want to say? A fourth pshat. Elohacha b'shayla dehegdish kamiflegi. The machlokis between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua is, can you go to a chacham and use the normal ways of stopping a neder, or in this case, stopping Hegdish, which will be to have charata, you feel bad about the neder, you regret that you ever made that you made a neder, or in our case, that you were magdish something, or a Pesach. Had I known that what circumstances this would entail, I would have never have made the neder or be magdish this. I find a opening of the person never making the neder under these circumstances. Is that effective to remove Hegdish or not? And this is really totally whether Hegdish by mistake is still considered Hegdish or not, which is a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, in, as Rashi brings down in Nazir Daflamid Amid Beis, where a person says, the first ox that comes out of my house will belong to Hegdish. And let's say he said a white ox will come out, and that will be Hegdish. And in fact, a black ox came out, or reverse, he said a black ox and a white ox. So Beis Shammai is of the opinion that even though there was a mistake, because when he said a white ox, a black ox came out, so Beis Shammai says, even though there's a mistake, the black ox is Hegdish. Hegdish betos is Hegdish, because he didn't make his Hegdish, according to Beis Shammai, conditional only if a white ox will come out. But if a black ox comes out, I don't want it to be Hegdish. What he meant to say is the first one, whatever comes out, I just know it's going to be white. And in fact, what happened, he made a mistake and the black one came out. But he still meant to be Magdish, according to Beis Shammai. However, Beis Hillel disagrees. Beis Hillel says he only meant it if a white one comes out. And if a black one, in fact, came out, he never meant it. So too, here, where we're saying, we're discussing whether you can make Shiloh by Hegdish. Can I find some mistake in his original commitment to make this Hegdish or not? So that will be totally in this machlokes. According to Beis Shammai, that even a Hegdish by a mistake is still Hegdish. So the Chacham won't be able to break the Hegdish that he committed this article or this field to Hegdish. Because what are you going to say? He made a mistake, but a hegdish and a mistake is still a hegdish, according to Beis Shammai. So that's the svara of Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, you're unable to get out of the hegdish through shaylik. Rabbi Elazar holds like Beis Shammai. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua holds like Beis Hillel, that hegdish betos is not a hegdish. So it's much easier for him to go to a chacham and get shaylik on his neder to be magdish something, and it's effective, that Shaila, then to divorce his wife and then go remarry her and make a knunya. So that's why Rabbi Yeshua is of the opinion, Einoi Tzarech, you don't need a neder, because what are you worried about? He's making a knunya. If he wants to get out of it, he has a much easier thing. He goes to a chacham, and the Shaila of the chacham will be mefer, it will destroy his original neder to hegdish. It's only according to Beis Shammai where it won't work. So Rabbi Elazar says correctly, according to Beis Shammai, the hegdish is still a hegdish. There's no way for him to get out of it. So then we're worried that he'll do a kenunya. And that's why you have to make a neder, according to Rabbi Elazar, according to Beis Shammai, that he shouldn't remarry his wife because he has no way out. But according to Beis Hillel, according to Rabbi Yeshua, there's another way out, a simple way out. He'll go to a chacham, and the chacham will destroy his neder. There is shiloh by hegdish. You don't say hegdish betos remains hegdish. That's what the Gemara says. And now the Gemara says, V'hatanya, as Rashi says, b'nechusa. This is not a question, but rather the Gemara now is bringing a proof. I'll bring you a proof that this is correct. The machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua is exactly the same machlokas as Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, because we learned in a brisa, Hamagdish nechasa, some of the sanctified is nechasa, v'hoysa loksa v'sisha. There was a shibud of a lien of his wife against the hegdish. Rabbi Elazar, I'm merkishim megarsha. If he divorces her, yidur hanah, he has to prohibit himself from getting any hanah from his wife in the future, and therefore he'll not be able to remarry her, and he will not make a knunya. Rabbi Yeshua, I'm ainay tzarech. It is not necessary. We don't have to worry about knunya because he's able to go to a chacham and destroy the hegdish. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, hein, devir Beis Shammai, hein, devir Beis Hillel. The machlokes Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar is exactly the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. She Beis Shammai, I'm hegdish tos hegdish. Beis Shammai says a hegdish by mistake is a hegdish. So therefore, you cannot do shaila on hegdish based on a mistake. And therefore, we're worried he'll do a trick. And therefore, he has to make a neder according to Rabbi Eliezer. However, based on the loimrim, hegdish tos, ain't a hegdish. The hegdish by mistake is not a hegdish. Therefore, shaila for hegdish works. And therefore, we don't have to worry about knunya because it's much easier for him to go to a chachman and break his hegdish in that way through shaila than divorce his wife and remarry her. So we're not worried about a knunya. And now the lashon is very good that Rabbi Yeshua says, ain't a tzarech. You don't have to make a neder because you don't have to worry about Kenunya, since he can get out of it without a trick. Legally, he can get out of it by going to the Chacham. Now, according to this explanation, the final explanation of the Gemara in the Machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Yeshua, the Chayridus Machlokes is only in the first case of the Mishnah, by Hamagdish Nechasev. However, in the second case of the Mishnah, by an Arev, we don't have this Machlokes of Hegdish Betos, of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So now, it's only a question whether he'll make a Kenunya and will he be able to make a neder and get out of the neder? And here we're of the opinion that whether it's done al das rabim, everybody holds that their hafora is not possible. We're now going, like we said from our mamer, that a neder that's done al das rabim ain't lo hafora. And so memela here, Rabbi Yeshua again will not argue. According to this pshat, Rabbi Yeshua is only arguing by hegdish. Because Einoi Tzarech, you don't need a neder, because you can get out of it in a simpler legal way of Shaila by Hegdish. However, by an Orev, by a Hedjit, there, Bezdin will force him to make a neder. He won't be able to get out of the neder, because it'll be Aldas Rabim and Ein Lo Yafora, and then that takes care of the problem of Kenunya, and here Rabbi Yeshua will agree to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that we make him make a neder. Continues the Gemara with the seif of the Mishnah concerning Arev, v'chein hayu Rabbi Shimon Gamliel loimer, that not only do we do the neder, not to remarry his wife, by hegdish, but we do it by an Arev as well. The Gemara relates a story concerning this halacha of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Moshe bar Atzri, Arva de Kalas Yave. Moshe bar Atzri was the Arev for his daughter-in-law's ksuba. In other words, if his son will not be able to pay the ksuba, his daughter-in-law will be able to go to him to collect the ksuba. V'Rav Huna Berei, Rav Huna, the son of Moshe Bar Atzri, Tzurmud Rabban Hava, he was a Talmud Chacham, Udechikalei Milsa. And he was, as many times is with a Talmud Chacham, he was in bad financial straits. And he didn't have money to live. Amar Abaya, so Abaya said, Leka de Nazbi Eitza le Rav Huna de Lagarish le Devusa. Is there no one who can give Rav Huna an Eitza to go and divorce his wife? V'titvek subasum yavio. And she will go to his father, and she will collect her ksuba. Ulahadra mahadre. And then Rav Huna will remarry his wife. And then they'll be able to live off the money that she collected from her father-in-law for the ksuba. Amale Rava, so Rava says to Abaya, what kind of eitz is this? V'anan yidur hanotanan. We learned in our Mishnah, the Sefer of our Mishnah, Rav Shimon Gamliel said, that Bezdin forces him to be madur hanah from his wife, that he will not remarry her when he divorces her. So what kind of eitz are you telling him to go divorce his wife? He's going to have to make a neder that he's not going to remarry her, which he doesn't want to do. So it's not an eitz. So Abaya, and what was the reasoning of Abaya? Because Abaya reasoned, Otu kol de megarish bebeit dino megarish. Does everyone who gives a get give it in Bezdin? Einich nami the minig is that a get is given in front of Bezdin. But me'ikra din, one can in private give a get, not in front of Bezdin, as long as there are two Eidim who witnessed the divorce. Or, as Rabbeinu Gershon tells us, the third line, wide line at the bottom of the Amud of Rabbeinu Gershon, Divra Maschel Beidina Megarish, Afilu Befnei Gimel Had Yoytis Yochel Legarish, She'enen Yoytin Shetzorech Lahadira. Even if he'll do it in a Bezdin, says Rabbeinu Gershon, but it doesn't have to be mumchim, it doesn't have to be ones who know the halacha well, it'll be three plain people, they are not learned, they don't know this Mishnah in Erech and Davchav Gimel that you have to make a neder, in this case when you divorce your wife, and in front of three Hadyaitis, he'll be able to divorce his wife, and he'll be able to remarry her because he never made the neder. That was the Eitz of Abaya. L'soif, Igloi Milsa, at the end, it was discovered, the Kayan Hava, that in fact, Rav Huna was a Kayan. And Mimela, this whole Eitzah wouldn't have worked, because if he would have divorced his wife, he wouldn't have been able to remarry her, because a Kohen cannot remarry his own divorced wife. He's also in a Grusha. Abaya, when Abaya heard this, Abaya said, Basar Anya Azlan Yusa, that poverty follows the poor man. You know, someone who's poor and in bad financial straits, so he, many times we find he has no Eitzah. An Eitzah that might work for somebody else won't work for him because poverty follows him all around. Now to get more questions. How could Abaya give such an Eitzah? Umi Omer Abaya Hochi. V'Omer Abaya. Abaya himself said concerning a different halacha, Ezel Rosh Arum, who's considered an evil person who's cunning, Ze HaMesi Eitzah Limchor Ben Chasim K'Rab Shimon Ben Gamliel. That's someone who gives an advice to sell property like Rav Shimon Gamliel. What does this refer to? So Rashi brings down the Gemara in Ksubas Daf Tzadik Hayam at Beis that Rav Shimon Gamliel says in a case where Ha'imer B'Shas Misa Nechasai Loch V'Achrechel Aplaini, that Reuven says at the time of his death that I'm giving my property to you, Shimon, and after you die it should go to Levi. After you've used the property, then you should give it over to Levi. And v'holach harishon u'mocher l'acher, and Shimon went, and he sold it in his lifetime. He sold it to someone else. So now, when Shimon's going to die, there'll be nothing left over to give to Levi, and the proceeds from the sale will go to the yorshim of Shimon. So Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, ein l'sheni l'masha shir rishon. Levi, who was supposed to get it with the death of Shimon, gets nothing because there's nothing left. When Reuven said that it should go from Shimon to Levi, that's if there's something here. But if Shimon got rid of it during his lifetime, there's nothing to give over to Levi. So even though legally this person did something that's legal, however, Abaya said, if someone gives an Eitzah, someone would go over to Shimon and say, why keep it till your death and it'll go over to Levi? Sell it while you're alive, and then your Yorshim will be able to use the money of the sale. Somebody who gives such an advice is considered a Rasha Arum. He's cunning because he's doing something which technically is legal, but he's doing something which is not the will of the person who gave the Yerusha to Shimon. His will was that it should go to Levi. So he's circumventing that will in a cunning, legal way. But he's a Rasha also because he's giving an advice in something that doesn't pertain to him. And by giving this advice, he is stopping the will of Reuven from being implemented. And that's why he's called a Rasha Arms. So the Gemara is asking here too, how could Abai himself, who said that in Reb Shimon Gamliel's case, if someone gives such an advice, it's a Rasha Arum, Abai seems to be a Rasha Arum here as well, because he's giving an advice that in a cunning way that Rav Huna should divorce his wife, and then his wife will be able to get the ksuba from her father-in-law, and then Abaya, and then Rav Huna and his wife will be able to live off those proceeds. That also seems to be a Rasha Arum. Answers the Gemara, no. There's two differences here. Because number one, Berei Shiny, his son is different. As the Rabbeinu Gershom says, two lines before the end of the Amid, the Seif Dover Roy Huli Yarshai. A son, after all, eventually, when Moshe ben Bar Atzri dies, his property will go over to his Yarish, Rav Huna. Rav Huna will Yarshin him. So now he's just giving it to him during his lifetime, but eventually it's going to go to him anyway. So he's a son, and it's correct that he should support his son. And Vitzur b'Merabbanan Shani, the Gemara adds, he's also a Talmud Chacham, and therefore it's fitting to support a Talmud Chacham. And therefore, these two items together, the fact that it's his son who is a Talmud Chacham, who's in bad financial straits and who needs support, and eventually he's going to yarshin him anyway after Moshe Bar Atzri's death, therefore the advice of Abai was not considered Rasha Arum. Ask the Gemara, but what kind of advice is it altogether? The Tapaglay, the Orev, why don't we say the Orev de Ksuba loy mishtabit? That even though an Orev works in a loan, but in a case of a Ksuba, as the Gemara will give the reason on Amud Beis, a Arva should not work for a Ksuba. So the Gemara answers as we turn to Daf Chav Gimel Beis, Kablan Hava, Einichanami, Moshe Bar Atzri here was not just a regular Orev who, if you come to collect the ksuba from a regular Orv, the Orv does not have to pay the ksuba, as we'll see the reason in a few moments. But here it's speaking about an Orv Kablon, a stronger Orv. An Orv Kablon is one where in a case of a loan, normally the malva goes to the loiva, and if the loiva has nothing to pay, then the malva goes to the Orv. But in the case of an Orv Kablon, he doesn't have to go to the loiva, he can go right away to the Orv Kablon. What makes someone such a stronger type of an Orv? So Rashi says that Rav Huna here, when he got his father to be the Orv for the Ksuba, took Metalkalin, gave it to his wife. His wife went ahead and gave that to the father. And Rashi and Gittin on Daf Mem Tesamud Beis says that the father gave it back, but this process of Rav Huna through his wife giving it to his father, that action causes the arvus of Moshe Bar Atzri to be a stronger type of an arv. That's called an arv kablin. Actually, the Gemara there in Gittin, the other Rishonim learn that you don't even have to do this action from the Rav Huna to his wife and from the wife to her father-in-law. But rather, the Pashut of the Gemara there is, the difference between an Orav and an Orav Kablan is that by an Orav, he says, lend the money and I'll pay you back if the Loiva doesn't have it. That's a regular Orav. And Orav Kablan, he says, give him the money and I'll give it to you back. And that Lashon of give him the money and I will give it to you back, that's a stronger lashon. And as we said, even when the loiva has money, the malva can go directly to the orev kablan. And therefore, even though an orev is not mishubah to pay for a ksuba, as we'll see the reasons shortly, however, an orev kablan, as Moshe Bar Atzri was, an orev kablan is obligated to pay not only a regular loan, but is obligated to pay a ksuba as well. Before we go on to the next piece of Gemara, let us look at the Rabbeinu Gershom on the left side, in the left column, around 10 lines down. On Divrei HaMashal, Mayik LeMeimar says the Rabbeinu Gershom, the Kosal Kedatach, the Rav Huna Loi Havalei Nichsei B'Shaw Shanasa Aviv Kablan. So Rabbeinu Gershom says the Gemara assumes that not only was Rav Huna poor later in life, but when he got married, when the Shibud went to his father to be the Orev on the Ksuba of his wife, at that time, coming into the marriage, he was also poor. Even though we saw in the top Rashi, that Rashi says that he gave Metaltalim as a collateral to his wife, who then gave it to her father-in-law. So we see he had some metaltolin, but what a Orev Kablan wants to see is not just metaltolin, he wants to see karka. So he, apparently the Gemara assumes that he didn't have any property. And the difference is whether the Orev Kablan will be meshabet himself, if he sees that his, the one he is guaranteeing for has an ability by himself to pay, then he's more serious about being a guarantor. If he sees that that person has no ability to pay, he has no property, so then even if he says he'll be a guarantor, he really doesn't mean it. So based on this Hagdama, let's see the next Gemara. Han Nichla Mandi Amar. We're going to learn soon on this Amid. One Mandi Amar says that Kablon Afogav de Lesle Nichse Luloiva Mishtabit, that the Kablon is Mishtabit himself even if the Loiva does not have property. So then it's good. Rav Huna didn't have property here, and yet we say his father was a Kablon, and he was Mishabit himself to, he obligated himself to pay if his son won't be able to pay the Ksuba. El Lamandi Omer, Isle Mishtabit, Lesle, Le Mishtabit. But according to the Mandi Omer that we'll soon learn, who holds that even by an Orev Kablon, and even though Rashi here on the third line says Le Mishtabit, Orev, a regular Orev, but we'll see from the Gemara that it's Lav Dafka, a regular Orev, even an Orev Kablon. Even in Arv Kabbalan, he's only Meshabit himself if the Loiva has the ability, if his son would have had the ability to pay at the time when he got married. But Lesley, if the Loiva for whom he is being a guarantor doesn't have any property and is unable to pay, Loi Meshabit, then he's not Meshabit. As Rashi says, the Kivan de Ein Loi Mimali Pare Min HaLoiva Loi Gomer Meshabit Nafshi. That since he knows they're going to come immediately to him, they're not even going to attempt to go to the Loiva because the Loiva has nothing, so he really didn't mean to obligate himself either to be a guarantor. He'd only be a guarantor if there's a chance that they'll first go to the Loiva. But if Lesley, Loi Meshabit, so Michael Amemer. So how can you give me an answer over here that Moshe Bar Atzri was Mishabit himself to pay for his son? According to this Mandi Amar, it would only be if his son had property when he got married. But if the Gemara is assuming he didn't have property, and if so, there's one Mandi Amar holds that even an Orev Kablon is not Mishabit himself by Iksuba. To Michael Maimer. So what was Abaye's Eitze? He should get divorced and go to the Orev. The Orev wouldn't have been mechuyev to pay anyway. So the Gemara gives two terutzim. Ibo yisem Rav Huna havalev ishtadav. Either Rav Huna at the beginning of his marriage, contrary to the salkadatach, to the havamina, Rav Huna did have property, but the property got ruined. The Ibo yisem a second teretz. When do we say an Orev Kablon is not Meshabit himself if the loiva doesn't have anything that's a regular loiva? But here we're talking about a son. Abel, Agabe Bray, a father pertaining to his son, Shibda Meshabed Nafshe, he does obligate himself to pay, even if his son has nothing to pay. And now the Gemara says the Itmor, in other words, that which we mentioned here on the top of the Amud, that an Orev Kablon is a machloikis, whether he undertakes to be a guarantor, even if the loiva has nothing or not. Where did we see this machloikis? In the following Brisa. Orev the Ksuba, if someone's a regular Orev for Ksuba, they're called Loi Mishtabit. He's not Mishtabit. As we saw on Amid Aleph, at the bottom line on Amid Aleph, the Gemara asks, an Orev by Ksuba is not Mishtabit. The reason for it, we will see in a few moments. So, but everybody holds this. Orev the Ksuba, they're called Loi Mishtabit. Kablon de Balchoiv, a Kablon in the case of a Loiva, of a Choiv, they're called Mishtabit. He is Mishtabit himself, if he's a Kablon. Orev de Balchoiv. But what about an Orev of a Balchoiv? The Kablon and an Orev Kablon Diksuba of Iksuba. Please, here we have a Machlaikis. Ikla Mandi Amar, one opinion holds Isle Nichse Luloiva Mishtabit. If the Loiva has property to pay himself at the time of the loan, then the Orev does take it seriously and his guarantee is a real guarantee. And then if the Loiva doesn't have later on, when the Malva comes to collect the loan, he could go to the Orev Kablon. Or in the case of a Choiv, he can go to the Orev. Lesley Loi Mishtabdi. So, but if he doesn't, if the Loiva never had, then the Orev is not Mishtabdi himself. That's one opinion. Veiklam on the Omer, and the other opinion holds that Afagav de Lesley Mishtabdi, that even if the Loiva or the husband who has to pay the Ksuba doesn't have, still he's Mishtabdi himself. The Hilchas of Bekulu, the Halach is in all cases. We have two, we had two cases by an Orev Kablan and two cases by an Orev. We have an Orev by a Ksuba and an Orev by a Bal Choyf. We have an Orev Kablan by a Ksuba and an Orev Kablan by a Bal Choyf. The Hilchus of Bekula, Afak of the Lesley, Nami Mishtabit. That if a person is a guarantor, he's an Orev, he's Mishtabit himself, he obligates himself to pay, even if at the time when the commitment is made by the Orev, the person he's making the commitment for has nothing to pay. Levar, with the one exception of these four cases, may Orev de Ksuba, a regular Orev, not Orev Kablan, of Ksuba. The Afal gav de Islay, loy mishtabe. The halacha is that only in this one of the four cases do we say that even if the person has to pay, still the Orev is not mishabit himself. Only an Orev Kablan would be mishabit himself. So here we're saying that by Ksuba, even if the husband has at the time of the marriage property from which to pay the Ksuba, still the Orev doesn't mean it seriously. My time, what's the reason? If the husband has, so why shouldn't I say that the guarantor means it seriously? Says the Gemara answers, because mitzvah ka'avid. Because he says to himself that I am doing a mitzvah. The wife is worried about herself collecting the ksuba, so I'll say, I want to make a shidduch, I want them to get married, I'm doing a mitzvah, so I'll say, don't worry about it, I'm going to take care of it. And secondly, v'loy midi chasrei, he says to himself that she's not losing anything, she's not losing any money by me being an orev here. It's not that she lent money to the husband, all she did is get married. They were shining mass, but she's giving up her being a single, and she's getting married. So how can he rationalize and say, I don't really mean it because I'm doing a mitzvah, and then I didn't cause her to lose any money, even if I won't come through with my guarantee. But based on his word, she went through with the marriage. The answer is, on this, the Gemara tells us, Tav melemetiv tandum melemetiv armla. For a woman, it's better to have an imperfect husband, even rather than living alone. So the marriage itself is not considered that she gave up anything. She gained a husband. And the Orev rationalized that since I'm doing a mitzvah and she's not losing anything anyway, I don't really have to be sincere about my guarantee. So therefore we say he didn't take it seriously. You cannot go to him for the ksuba by a regular Orev. That's why we learned on Amud Aleph, at the bottom of Amud Aleph, that Orev, the ksuba, loy mishtabit, and that's even if the husband has money. The only time by Ksubit works is by an Orev Kabbalan. The Gemara continues with a story. Ahu gavra dezvininhu lenichsei. There was a person who sold his property, v'kagorsha ledevisu, and then he divorced his wife. Sholcha Rabbi Yosef reidu Rava lekamei Rapapa. So Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rava, sent a question in front of Rapapa, Orev Tanan. We learned in our Mishnah that in a similar case by a guarantor, we have learned that we are worried about a knunya, that maybe a trick is being done. Hegdish tanan, we learned the first case in our mission as well by Hegdish, that if the ksubas isha was from Hegdish, we're worried about a knunya if the husband divorces his wife, that maybe he just wants to get the property back from Hegdish. And the same was by the case of an orev for the ksuba in our Mishnah. That's what we said, Orev Tanan, because it was also a case of Ksuba, and we're worried that when he divorces his wife, it's just a trick to get the property back from the Orev or from Hegdish. So in our Mishnah, because of Knunya, we have learned that the husband has to make a neder that he will not have any Hanoa from his wife after he divorces her, and that will make it that he's unable to take his wife back. Lekeach Mahu. Now, this case that we had over here is a case where the husband sold it. It's not a case of Orev, it's not a case of Hegdish, and the question is, did the Rabbanan institute that a neder has to be made in the case of a husband selling it to the Lekeach? Because also we're worried about a trick, about a knunya, that maybe when he doesn't have any money to pay his wife's ksuba, she will go and collect from the Lekuchais, and then they will remarry, and they'll be able to support themselves from the proceeds of what the wife has collected from the Lekuchais. Did Bezdin make a takana that the husband has to make a neder that he won't have anah from his wife in the future? He will not remarry. That is the question that was asked of Rapapa. Now, Tosfos, Divrei HaMashal, Orev, the first Tosfos on the Amud, asks a very strong question. Didn't Rabbi Yosef Bereda Rav, who asked the question, know that Shas is full of this very case where a husband sells his property and then the wife comes to collect the ksuba from the property because she has a lien on it because of the ksuba, and nowhere does it say that the husband has to make a neder that he won't remarry his wife? And Tosfos answers, V'shema yesh loymar, shemachar nechasa v'girsha miyad. We're speaking about a special case here where immediately after he sold his property, immediately he divorced his wife. And therefore, in this case, and only in this case by Lekuchos, was there a cheshash about a trick. But Tosfos adds, Avlam hoya hamecher koidim harbe min agershin. Shagir shel achas man, if he sold it and a lot of time went by until he divorced his wife, then we would not have suspected that there was a trick going on. And that's what the cases in Shas are speaking about, where the divorce took place a long time after the property was sold. Here, it happened right away, and therefore there was a chash of Knunya. And now let's go back to the Gemara. Amar Leis Rav Papa responded, Tana ki ruchla nechshav v'nezel. Are we going to say that our Tana was like a peddler who counts every coin, and do you expect him to enumerate on each and every case? If it said a case of Orev and it said a case of Hegdish, then Lekeach is included as well, and the Tana just didn't elaborate on every case, but you have to make a neder not to have Hanoah from your wife after you divorce her. Nardoi, Amri, Nardoi disagree, and they say, Disnan Tnan, whatever was learned Beferish in the Mishnah, Orev and Hegdish, there we force the husband to make that neder not to have anah from his wife, but the Loitnan, Loikeach, which is not listed in our Mishnah, which is not learned in our Mishnah, we say it's not learned, and there is no halacha, even in the special case that Tosfos mentioned, where he divorced his wife right after he sold the property. Let's understand, Nardoi, in what way is Lekeach different than Orev or Hegdish? So the Gemara answers, Bishlam Hegdish, I can understand Hegdish, why he had to make a neder not to have enough from his wife after he divorced her, not to remarry her, Mishum Revach the Hegdish, because Bezdin has a responsibility because of the gain of Hegdish, in order to protect the property of Hegdish, so Bezdin puts the extra emphasis on protecting Hegdish, and therefore they force the husband to make the neder not to remarry his wife. Orev Nami. By an Orev, we can also understand why Bezdin wants to protect the Orev, because, after all, mitzvah hu da'avid. He did a mitzvah to make the shidduch here, and being the guarantor, and the woman felt secure that she would go ahead with the shidduch because she has a guarantee she would get her ksuba, the lav medichasrei. And by being an Orev, he didn't cause her to give up any money, and therefore, because of all this, the Chachamim wanted to make sure that we would protect the Orev, and therefore we made the husband as well make the neder not to remarry his wife, that there shouldn't be a kenunya here. Elo Lekeach, but in the case of Lekeach, Michti, made the yod the chol chad v'chad ikol eksub. Every Lekeach knows that every husband has a shibud, a lien, because of Iksuba. He has an obligation to pay the Iksuba. And by buying this property, it'll be a lien on this property. Amai, Nezel v'nizma. Why did he go ahead and buy the property from the husband when he knows that if the husband doesn't have money to pay the Iksuba, that they're going to come to him and ask for payment? And he didn't do it out of a chesed, out of a mitzvah, like a regular Orev by Iksuba. So, since he did it selfishly, just to buy property, and he wasn't careful with the fact that he knows, with the knowledge, that if the husband doesn't have, they're going to come after him, therefore, Nardoi holds that Bezdin doesn't have to go out of its way to protect him, and therefore, in the case of Lekeach, it's different than Hegdish and Orev, and no neder is made that the husband shouldn't remarry his wife. Continues the next Mishnah. This Mishnah will explain how a woman is able to be gova, what the process is for her to collect her ksuba from Hegdish, and also how a balchov will collect his debt from property that the lova was magdish. Begins the Mishnah. Ha magdish nechasov. If somebody made his property Hegdish, v'hoysa olav ksubas isha, and there was on it a lien from his wife, or Ubal Chayv. There was a lien on the property because he owed money to the Malva. And Rashi explains here that we don't have a problem in this Mishnah of a possible Knunya, as we had in the last Mishnah, because here it's speaking about where he divorced his wife a long time before he was Magdish to Nechasov. So our Chashash of a Knunya is not here in such a case. The Rishash says that our Mishnah could be speaking about where, in fact, he already had made a neder that he was not going to remarry his wife. And therefore, the gate is open for his wife to collect her ksuba from Hegdish, or for the Baal Chayiv to collect from Hegdish. Now, there's a special process when you do this. Ein ha'isha yichol ligvash ksubasim min ha'hegdish, v'loi Baal Chayiv es Chayivoy, they are unable to collect from Hegdish. Ela ha'poda podam anas liten le'isha, b'ksubasa ulebal chov es Chayivoy. The one who redeems, Rashi says that this will be the husband in the case of his wife's ksuba, or the love in the case of a loan. The one who is redeeming redeems with the intention that he's going to give the property to his wife for her ksuba, or to the malva for the loan that he owes him. And this is not me'ikra din. Me'ikra din, when he consecrated his property to Hegdish, and there's a lien on it, so the woman or the Baal Chov have a right to go to Hegdish and collect from Hegdish. As we'll see in the Gemara, it's only a takana of the Rabbanan that people should not see Hegdish being taken without any pidgin, and they will think that one is able to collect from the Bedek Abayis without redeeming. And therefore, we make a token redemption, as Rashi says, that the Lova will give, or the husband and the Ksuba will give, a dinner. Or, Rashi says, bedover muad, or even less than a dinner, a coin. It's a token redemption that people should see that whenever you take from Hegdish, you have to be poda. Continues the Mishnah. Hegdish tishimana v'hayachayv meyamana. What happens if the love consecrated a field that was worth 90 mana, but his debt to the malva was 100 mana? So, moisiv oy dinner, Rashi says, the Baal Chov adds another dinner to the amount that the Lova owes him, because the Lova needs a dinner to make the pidgin, as we learned in the Reish of the Mishnah. Upodes ha-nechasim elu, and then the Lova is poded these nechasim, amenas liten li'ishik subosu le'Baal Chov es Chayvoy, on the condition to give the nechasim to the woman for her ksuba and to the Baal Chov for his chov. Now, if we look in that Rashi, Mosev owed dinner, Rashi says, the last Rashi in the Mishnah, Baal Chov Yosef owed lahalvosei dinner, lezeh, to the lova, upodes anachasim elu. Taisus learns in the wording of Rashi that Rashi seems to say that the Baal Chov will do the pidyon of the nechasim. And on that, Taisus in the Vyamaskal Mosev owed dinner says that that's difficult, because from the Mishnah further, it states that upodes anachasim elu amenas litein leishik subasa ula Baal Chov es Chayvoy. So it clearly indicates from the Mishnah that it's the Lova who is giving the field then to the Baal Chov to pay for the debt that he owes to the Baal Chov. According to Rashi, it seems that the Baal Chov is adding another dinner to what the Lova owes him. He's making the pidyon. Then the words of the Mishnah do not fit in. And therefore, Taisus learns that Moisev Adiner goes to the Lova, that he doesn't have any money. He's in debt. So he has to go through the process of pidyon, as we explained in the Reish of the Mishnah. So he adds another dinner to the debt load that he has. And with that dinner, the lova is poda, and then he gives it to the woman for her ksuba, or to the Baal Chov for his chov. The Taisus Yontiv, in defense of Rashi, says that Rashi also means that. Rashi learns that the Baal Chov is the one who will lend the dinner to the lova. Taisus learns the lova will get the dinner from somebody else, from another person who will lend him that dinner. But Rashi's learning the Balchov will lend him the dinner. But then when Rashi says, Upodes on the Chosim Elu, Rashi means that the Lova, the one who has to make the pigeon, as Rashi earlier said, Hapoda Poda, Rashi learns, Ela Poda Poda, Divrei Maschil, Rashi learns, Bailim Poda, my son, Mina Hegdish, the owner of the field who consecrated this field to Hegdish, he's the one who has to now redeem it. So Rashi remains with that. Rashi's just saying, where is this poor man now going to get a dinner? He'll get a dinner, another dinner from the one who lent him the money. He'll owe him another dinner. And then the Lova is the one, not the Balchov. The Lova is the one who's potted in the Chasim, and then he'll give it to the Balchov. So according to Rashi, the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa of the Mishnah is that the Reisha, the Chov, was equal to the value of the field, and in the Seifa, the Chov was not equal to the value of the field, and Afal Pikein, the Mishnah is telling you that we go through this pigeon process, and it ultimately winds up to be given to the Malva to satisfy the loan that the Lova owes him. Continues the Gemara, and the Gemara asks a very fundamental question. Lomali lemeimar hapoda poda. Why is it necessary to say that the poda will be poda? And Rashi explains that l'chora, the woman who has a lien on this field that her husband dedicated to Hegdish, or to Balchov, who has a lien, they should be able to get it without the process of pidgin, of redemption. Rashi says, the Hegdish is not chal on when the husband or the lova was magdish this field. The Hegdish was never chal. Why, says Rashi, ain other magdish davar shein shloi. It's not their field. Since there's a lien on it, it really belongs to the woman. It really belongs to the malva. Rashi in Psachim tells us that it's because it's ain b'shusoi. Just like you can't be magdish something that you don't own, you also can't be magdish something that is not in your possession. And since there's a lien on it, it's not considered in the husband's possession. It's considered in his wife's possession. It's not in the lova's possession. It's considered in the malva's possession. Ainot a magdish davar she'ainay shaloi. However, Rashi, both here and in Pesachim, goes with the shita that the hegdish is not even chal if the husband was magdish when he has a lien. However, Taisim Sachem says, no, the Hegdish is Chal, but when the woman comes to be Taiveya, her Ksuba, immediately the Hegdish ceases to exist, and that is the Gemara's Kasha over here. If there's a previous Shibud, then why shouldn't the Hegdish just cease to exist, even though it was Chal according to Taisim Sachem till now, but it should cease to exist without any pigeon, since there's a prior Shibud on this Karka, either from a Ksuba or from a Chov. So the Gemara answers, Mishum de Rabba Vua, because of what Rabba Vua said, Amar Rabba Vua, Shola Yoimru Hegdish Yaitzab Loi Pidgin, it's a special Takanas Chachamim, that people should not see that Hegdish is going out without pigeon. So they made a requirement that there should be a token pigeon of a dinner, or Rashi said even less than a dinner, just to satisfy this idea that people should not think that Hegdish can be taken away, something can be taken away from Hegdish without pigeon. Says the Gemara, Masisa like Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Tan of our mission is not going like Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Sanya, we learned in a Brisa. Rav Shimon Gamliel Oimer, Im Hoya Chayva Kenegat Egdesh, when do we go through this pigeon process? When the Chov equaled to the amount that the field that he dedicated to the Bet HaKabayis, how much it was worth. But Vim Lav, but if the Chov is even greater, as we had in the Seif of our Mishnah, where the Chov was 100 and the field was only worth 90, if it's greater, Einoi Poydev. Then we don't go through the pigeon process. Why? Because in such a case, Rav Shimon Gamliel holds, you'll be unable to collect from Hegdish. And what is the reason of that? So Rashi explains, because if the Chov is equal to the value of the field, then the Bal Chov, the Malva, has in his mind that he'll be able to collect from the Lova. If the Lova has no money to pay him, he'll be able to collect from that field, which is worth equal to his Chov. But if that field anyway is not worth up to his Chov, so part of this chov he's going to have to get from someplace else. So then we say, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, that he was not so mechdas. He didn't depend on the field at all, because he knows he can't satisfy his whole debt from the field, so he doesn't depend on it for anything. And therefore, the malva then cannot go to Hegdish and try to collect the chov from Hegdish, because he wasn't relying on that field when he made the loan. What was he relying on? He was relying on the simple faith, the emunah, the trust that he had in this lova, that the lova would make good on the loan. And therefore, he has no right to collect it from Hegdish. That's a sheet of Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Rabbanan disagreed. The Rabbanan said that whatever the field was worth, the Balchov was Sarmech Das, that the 90 out of the 100, as the case of the Mishnah is, that he would get from the field. The other 10 he would find elsewhere. But the 90 he would get. So our Mishnah is not the Rav Shimon Gamliel. Ask the Gemara, V'rabbanan at kama. How much does the field have to be worth? Yes, you said 90 to 100. What about if it's 70 to 100? If it's 40 to 100? At what point did the Rabbanan agree to Rav Shimon Gamliel that the Malva was not depending on the field to collect his debt, and therefore you would not be able to collect it from Hegdish? Amar Rav Huna bar Yehuda, Amar Rav Sheshes, Ad Palga, if the field was worth at least half. If it was, in the case of the Mishnah, 100 mana was the loan. If the field is worth at least 50 mana, then we say that the Malva was somach to get it, and the Rishonim explained this for her, because very often you can make a sale on property double what it's really worth. So if he saw that the field was at least worth half of the loan, he thought to himself, maybe I'll be able to sell it and get double what its value is now, and that will satisfy my loan. But if it's less than half, then we say the Rabbanan agreed to Rav Shimon Gamliel that he wasn't Samech on the field, he was Samech on the trust, and if he was Samech on trusting the Loiva, then you're not allowed to be gove it from Hegdash. Our Mishnah is not like Rav Shimon Gamliel, it's like the Chachamim, and until Palga, if it's worth at least half, the Rabbanan say that the Malveh could collect that half from Hegdash.